Birtwistle and by Holst, The Planets. That's our Sunday concert beginning at 2. In a moment, we mark the 300th anniversary of the birth of William Boyce with a tour of London that he knew and worked in. That's after a summary of the BBC News this lunchtime. Here's Vaughan Savage.
Commemorations are being held both here and in the United States in honour of all those who died in the September the 11th attacks 10 years ago today. Almost 3,000 people were killed when four planes were hijacked and crashed into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and a field in Pennsylvania. A service has taken place at St. Paul's Cathedral in London, and within the hour, commemorations will begin at Ground Zero in New York. Police have rescued 24 men who are believed to have been victims of slavery during a raid on a traveller's site in Bedfordshire. The men, most of whom were English or Eastern European, were said to be suffering from malnutrition and living in filthy, cramped conditions. It's understood some of them had been held against their will for up to 15 years. Three men and a woman have been arrested at the caravan site in Leighton Buzzard. Police in Sweden have arrested four people on suspicion of preparing a terrorist attack. They were detained in the country's second largest city, Gothenburg, earlier this morning. The leader of Libya's transitional council, Mustafa Abdul Jalil, is spending his first full day in Tripoli after arriving from the eastern city of Benghazi last night. Mr. Jalil said everything must be done to liberate the cities of Bani Walid, Siirt and Sabah, where pro-Gaddafi forces are continuing to put up stiff resistance. A suicide bomber has killed two people and injured more than 100 others at a NATO base in central Afghanistan. The bomber drove a lorry filled with explosives into the entrance of the military post in the province of Wardak. Two Afghan civilians were killed. Most of the wounded were American soldiers. The government has confirmed that it will speed up the timetable to bring forward increases to the state pension age. The Pensions Secretary, Ian Duncan-Smith, has argued that the existing schedule to raise the retirement age to 67 by 2036 and to 68 10 years later is too slow. He says the new dates have yet to be set. The weather, it'll be windy today and overnight, particularly in the northwest, with gale force gusts in exposed areas. There'll be rain in Scotland, Northern Ireland, North Wales and Northern England, with sunny spells and showers in the south. The BBC News and Weather at 2:30 past one.
Vaughan, thank you very much. Well, the four last songs are the subject of today's Discovering Music. Later this afternoon, Stephen Johnson will be exploring the structure and the context that drove Richard Strauss to write them. Discovering Music is at 5 this afternoon here on Radio 3. But next, this week's early music show, Lucy Skeeping travels across London in search of the story of a much-loved English composer.
Hello. This week sees the 300th anniversary of the birth of one of 18th century England's most celebrated composers. A man who seemed to have a finger in almost every musical pie, from the theatre to the church, from the concert hall to the royal court. And he was also a great favourite with the crowds who flocked to the pleasure gardens of London to enjoy the popular sounds that wafted out from the bandstand. So who's the subject of today's show? William Boyce.
Thank you.
The opening movement of William Boyce's First Symphony, first heard as the overture for his New Year Ode of 1756, and the performers there were the Academy of Ancient Music, directed by Christopher Hogwood. Well, in today's programme, we're on the Boyce Trail around London. I'm visiting some of the places around town that were associated with him, where he lived and where he worked and where his music was heard. My companion is the musicologist Jeremy Barlow, an old friend and colleague who I performed with for many years. One of his great loves is the English popular music of the 18th century, and he's with me now at our first stopping point, St Peter's Church in Vere Street. It's just off Oxford Street, a neat red brick chapel dating from 1722. I must say it's rather dwarfed these days by the huge department stores on either side. Well, Jeremy, thanks very much for joining me in the pouring rain. Now, why have we chosen this for the first venue?
Boyce's first appointment was here. It was then called the Oxford Chapel because it was built as a chapel of ease for the Earl of Oxford. It's actually, by London standards, a rather small church, and Boyce was then in his mid-20s, and this was his first rung up the musical ladder, really.
Did he come from a musical family? I mean, what sort of musical education had he had prior to this appointment?
His father was a joiner, so he didn't come from a musical background. His talents were spotted by the English composer Maurice Greene, and he joined St Paul's Cathedral as a chorister at the age of 9, and that was really the start of everything.
What kind of music would Boyce have composed while he was the organist here at Vere Street? I mean, presumably religious.
Boyce did compose quite a number of anthems, even though he became a secular composer later on.
So this is the anthem, Wherewithal Shall a Young Man, and the text, I think, is from one of the Psalms.
Yes, it's from Psalm 119. This is the longest, by a long way, of all the Psalms. It's 176 verses, but don't switch off, because Boyce only set 6 of them.
Thank you.
Wherewithal Shall a Young Man, the choir of New College, Oxford, directed by Edward Higginbottom, with an anthem by William Boyce, probably from around the 1740s. So, Jeremy, Boyce was busy here as an organist at St. Peter's Church, and it was now that his career really began to take off.
Oh, yes. 2 years later, he was appointed a composer to the Chapel Royal, and I think his mentor, Maurice Greene, who was the senior composer there, must have had something to do with that. And a year after that, in 1737, he was appointed conductor of the Three Choirs Festival.
Now, one particular piece, one of his symphonies, I think, is in fact associated with the Three Choirs Festival. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, that is the piece known as the Worcester Overture. The words overture and symphony were interchangeable then. And when Boyce published his eight symphonies, which were very popular, they were, in fact, all overtures that were written for other occasions. And this was a standalone piece, presumably, that was performed at the Worcester year of the Three Choirs Festival.
Sounds to me, this Worcester Overture, there's a lot of Handel in there.
Yes, generally in Boyce's music you can hear the Handel influence quite strongly, but I think particularly so in this piece. It's in the three-movement form. You start with this sort of rather ponderous French-style overture that Handel used a lot.
And this has got that dotted rhythm that I always associate with the French style.
Absolutely, yes. And then there's a gentler middle movement, rather sweet, and then a gavotte finale with variations. The gavotte was really Boyce's favourite dance form.
Thank you. Music by William Boyce, his Eighth Symphony, also known as the Worcester Overture. And that was the Academy of Ancient Music, directed by Christopher Hogwood. Well, we've moved across London now to another outdoor location, and whoopee, it stopped raining. We're standing in a smallish patch of ground beside the River Thames, not far from the Vauxhall Railway Bridge, which is a clue because this is the site, or what's left of it at any rate, of one of 18th century London's most celebrated pleasure gardens. Now, Jeremy Barlow, the grass here has been nicely landscaped, I must say. There are little rows of trees, it's a tea shop behind us there, and in front of us I can just see the edge of a city farm. But can we really get any sense of what this place would have been like in the 18th century from what we see now?
Not really, no. The gardens then were far larger than this patch of green that we have here now, and it's been landscaped now to look curved and irregular. But the Vauxhall Gardens then, opened by Jonathan Towers in 1732, were laid out in a grid pattern. The focal point of the gardens was a kind of bandstand, we'd call it now. It was called the orchestra then, and concerts took place on this orchestra, and people listened to them, sheltered from the English weather, in supper boxes, a whole line of adjacent booths with tables laid out, and you could order food there. One must remember, though, that even though a lot is talked about the music of Vauxhall Gardens, if you go to a gardens, you're looking at things, and Tyers had some stunning visual devices. The supper boxes, when it grew chilly, all together, these kind of blinds would unroll at the side of each supper box to give you shelter from the wind. And on these blinds were lovely paintings. And at the same moment, around about 9 o'clock in the summer, he managed to get hundreds, if not thousands, of lights to come on almost simultaneously. So it was a spectacular visual experience too.
The next music we're going to hear by William Boyce, we believe, was performed at some point here.
Well, what we're going to hear is an extract from the work called Solomon. Boyce called it, very unusually, a serenata, by which he meant really a very extended cantata. And it's for two soloists and a chorus, and it's nothing to do with King Solomon, as in the Book of Kings from the Bible, but it's to do with the Song of Solomon, the most erotic book in the Bible. The work did become extraordinarily popular, and this, what we're going to hear now, this air and chorus, Softly Rise, O Southern Breeze, which is about the arrival of spring, remained popular right into the 19th century, when the remainder of the words were seen as a bit too much for changing sensibilities.
Softly rise.
Softly Rise, O Southern Breeze, Howard Crook and the Parley of Instruments, with an air and chorus from William Boyce's Serenata Solomon, written in 1742 and first performed by the Apollo Society. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and I'm with the music historian Jeremy Barlow. We're on a trail today to explore some of the places in the capital that were associated with one of 18th century London's most celebrated composers, William Boyce. Well, Jeremy, we've moved on from the Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens site and we're in the heart of London's theatre land. In fact, we're in Drury Lane, not far from the Royal Opera House, and we're in the foyer of what I think is the oldest surviving theatre building in London.
Yes, we're in the foyer of the Theatre Royal Drury Lane. The shell of the building is the oldest surviving theatre in London. The interior was modernised much more recently. And it was here that William Boyce worked for a while for the great David Garrick, when David Garrick was running the theatre. You mentioned Covent Garden just across the road, and that was run by David Garrick's senior rival, John Rich, who had built it through making so much money from pantomimes and from the Beggar's Opera. And there was huge rivalry between the shows that they both put on.
So who was in charge of the music then at the rival house?
Rich used Arne quite a lot, and Thomas Arne was Boyce's great composer rival.
That's Thomas Arne of Rule Britannia fame.
Exactly, yes.
So what was the relationship like between these two composers, or the two theatre managers for that matter?
Well, the musical historian Charles Burney wrote that they were forever in each other's way. The next piece we're going to hear comes out of that competition. It's from some music for Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare's play, which Rich had put on at Covent Garden. And in those days, people took great liberties with Shakespeare. And one of the things that Rich did was that when Juliet is supposed to have died, he had a dirge scene where she's taken slowly across the stage. And he got Arne to write some music for that dirge. Garrick then put on Romeo and Juliet a little bit later. And he too introduced a similar dirge scene and got Boyce to write the music for his. And the words are by David Garrick himself, and they're pretty appalling, it has to be said. The first verse goes, "Rise, rise, heart-breaking sighs, the woe-fraught bosom swell, for sighs alone and dismal moan should echo Juliet's knell."
Opera Restored, directed by Peter Holman, with the dirge from Romeo and Juliet by William Boyce. And that was first performed on this site, i.e. the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane, around 1750. Well, I'm with Jeremy Barlow, and we're still in the foyer of the Theatre Royal in Drury Lane. Now, Boyce was obviously quite in demand at the theatre for his talent for writing good songs for the plays. Did he have a good and sort of lengthy relationship with Garrick?
It doesn't seem to have lasted in any big way for very long, just a couple of years, though he did supply Garrick with songs throughout the 1750s. Boyce also wrote some music for a pantomime that was put on here. It was called Harlequin's Invasion, and the song has actually become Boyce's best-known piece today, still very well-known today, and that is Heart of Oak, a very patriotic song. It immediately went into the repertoire, along with Arne's Rule Britannia, of pieces that were known then as loyal songs.
It's a wonderful song. I remember learning it at school. I don't know if they still do it these days, but it certainly continues to be popular with the forces. An arrangement for military band of William Boyce's Heart of Oak. Lovely stuff. Well, hooray for public transport, I say, because a comfortable double-decker bus has just delivered Jeremy and me here to the Royal Albert Hall. Why? Well, all the music dictionaries tell us that just about here is where Boyce's final home was. Apparently it was number 3 Kensington Gore, but can we find it? I mean, is there a blue plaque or anything? Jeremy, what do we think?
No, there's no blue plaque, but maps of the time do show a terrace of houses along Kensington Gore, the road that runs along the south side of Hyde Park. So when Boyce moved here, he would have had a lovely view of Hyde Park to the north, and to the south, it would have been countryside then. Kensington to the west was still a village outside London.
And of course, he wouldn't have known the Royal Albert Hall, because it would be another 100 years before that would have been built.
Yes, it was exactly 100 years later that the Albert Hall opened, yes.
So here in Kensington, this was Boyce's final home where he lived with his family. I mean, what sort of life was he leading now? He was obviously comfortably off. Was he very successful, well thought of? He was in his early 50s, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, he was right at the top of the English musical establishment now, and had probably actually just married before he moved here. And just a few years before, when his mentor, Maurice Greene, died, he took over the torch of being master of the King's music, and was recommended by his friend David Garrick.
One area of composition we haven't talked about, actually, was Boyce's chamber music. Was this a big part of his output? Because we don't hear that much about it.
No, well, he published in 1747 this collection of 12 trio sonatas. The trio sonata was popular among amateurs, and Corelli was the main name then. And these sonatas do follow on in the tradition of Corelli, in a way quite old-fashioned by 1747. But among amateurs, that was the music they liked to play.
We're going to hear Trio Sonata No. 4 now, performed by the Parley of Instruments. There's three movements, one of which has got a rather poignant significance.
Yes, compare it with the first and third movements. The second movement is very subdued in character, and it's a march, but nothing like Heart of Oak. It's a marked grave, and we can take it that it is intended as a funeral march. And when Boyce died, it was played at his funeral in St. Paul's Cathedral.
But first of all, the piece starts with a pretty grazioso. ¶¶ The Parley of Instruments with William Boyce's Trio Sonata No. 4, part of a set of 12 he published in 1747. Well, from West London to East, and the final part of our trail, we've arrived at one of London's greatest landmarks, St Paul's Cathedral. Now, this is the place where, as we heard earlier, William Boyce began his career as a chorister back in the 1720s. And, Jeremy, I gather he's buried here as well.
Yes, he was buried immediately beneath the centre of the dome, and it was an amazing funeral. It was absolutely packed out, and the combined choirs of St Paul's, of Westminster Abbey and the Chapel Royal sang at his funeral. He was much loved, and one of his pupils was Charles Wesley. He wrote, "A more modest man than Dr Boyce I have never known. I've never heard him speak a vain or ill-natured word, either to exalt himself or to depreciate another."
Jeremy, thank you so much for joining me and sort of taking me around London today. It's like having a blue badge guide for Boyce. It's wonderful. We're going to end the programme by returning to the late 1730s and what I think is one of Boyce's most, you know, delicious works. This is his Ode for St Cecilia's Day.
He was actually given its first performance in Dublin in 1740. The Dublin Journal reported that Boyce's Ode was allowed by several of the best judges to be one of the grandest performances that had ever been heard. And here, standing outside St Paul's Cathedral, this enormous edifice, we've come full circle. Boyce was a chorister here, but what a contrast to his first appointment at that fairly modest chapel in Beer Street.
Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us.
So
of William Boyce's Ode for St. Cecilia's Day, performed by the Hanover Band and Choir of New College, Oxford, and conducted by Graham Lee Cox. The early music show was presented by Lucy Skeeping with her guest Jeremy Barlow, and the producer was Andrew Smiley. And the early music show now has its own weekly podcast. It features edited highlights from the programmes, and you can find plenty of details about it on the Radio 3 website. Well, from tomorrow, our weekday schedule is changing in the mornings with an earlier start to breakfast from 6:30, and then at 9, a brand new programme.
I'm Rob Cowan, presenting a brand new programme called Essential Classics.
I'm Sarah Walker. This is Essential Classics.
New for weekday mornings on BBC Radio 3.
It will have the sort of classical music that is essential, so the absolute best-loved pieces. I hope Essential Classics will become an essential part of people's morning listening.
Sarah Walker and Rob Cowan.
And when I say essential, I mean essential. Both the repertoire that we're choosing and the recordings of works that we're going to play on the programme will be of exceptional quality.
Your essential start to the working day.
Great music, plenty of it. This
is Essential Classics.
New weekday mornings from 9 until 12 on BBC Radio 3.
Well, later this afternoon on Radio 3, rather than choral evensong, you can hear a special service of hope and healing, which took place in Washington's National Cathedral to mark the 10th anniversary today of the terrorist attacks in the United States of America. It begins this afternoon at 4 o'clock here on Radio 3. But next this afternoon, we're going to return you to Wednesday evening last week, because it's time now for the Sunday Concert, which is a recording of last Wednesday's prom given at the Royal Albert Hall and introduced by Katie Derham.
Welcome to the Royal Albert Hall for a very varied, very British programme tonight, performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra. Holst's Planets in the second half has ensured the hall tonight is buzzing and sold out. But before that, the crowd will hear A Real Rarity by Frank Bridge, his symphonic poem Isabella. And then we have a British premiere, Harrison Birtwistle's Concerto for Violin and Orchestra, which will be played by Christian Tetzlaff. Tonight's conductor is the BBC Symphony Orchestra's principal guest conductor, David Robertson. And earlier he told me how tonight's programme reflects the huge range of British musical styles.
The thing about the British seems to be that each one is part of this culture where the actual offering of the musical culture is so large and so varied in spectrum that what each individual composer makes of it is in fact their own language, much in the same way that many people in the world speak English. And yet there are so many different varieties of this language.
So, Isabella, a symphonic poem by Frank Bridge, a composer whose work we've been celebrating during the proms this year. Isabella was one of his earliest pieces, written in 1907 and inspired by the Keats poem of that name. It tells a particularly grisly story. Isabella's lover, Lorenzo, is murdered by her brothers. She finds his body, takes the head, and hides it in a pot of basil, which she then tends obsessively. Her brothers get suspicious. They take it away from her, at which point she pines away and dies. Like I say, a grisly and, let's be honest, rather unlikely tale. Lovely, sumptuous piece of music, though, and one not often heard.
What Bridge does is something that was really fascinating a lot of composers at the time, which was this idea of naming. Puccini made an entire career out of this, where the name signifies the other person. Tristan and Isolde is the same type of thing. And so right at the beginning, you have the two names of the lovers in the poem articulated on a C sharp, first in the timpani, Lorenzo, and then immediately the cellos respond, Isabella. And so these two sort of rhythms, these names, are constantly there in the background as a wonderful way of expressing this yearning in the piece.
So that is what you must be listening out for in this piece by Frank Bridge, Isabella, or the Basil Pot as it's sometimes known. The BBC Symphony Orchestra, you can hear them tuning up on stage. They're going to be led tonight by Andrew Havron and conducted, as I said, by David Robertson. In this piece, an early piece of Bridge, one which was premiered at the Queen's Hall Prom Concert on the 3rd of October in 1907, conducted then by Sir Henry Wood. And it was the biggest public success that Bridge had so far experienced. It didn't get many further performances. As I said, it comes into the rarity category in the proms this year. Andrew Havron, coming to the stage now, the leader of the BBC Symphony Orchestra. And here comes David Robertson, bringing the orchestra to their feet to accept the applause of the crowd here at the Royal Albert Hall and to perform the first piece on tonight's programme, Isabella by Frank Bridge.